Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From newsounds.org, this is the Soundcheck Podcast.
Until we can welcome musicians back to our studio, our soundcheck performances here at newsounds.org are featuring a mix of remote performances and favorite sessions from the past, like this one.
From the studios of WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The band OMD, Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, helped to define electronic music in the 1980s, so by extension, they have helped shape the sound of electronic pop ever since. The group reformed just over a decade ago and have continued to pick up right where they left off, making catchy, danceable, and substantial electronic music. Their latest album is called The Punishment of Luxury, and the two founding members of OMD are here to play a couple of songs for us live on Soundcheck. This first one is called Isotype. Here's OMD.
International System
of Typographic Picture
Education.
Isotype. Type.
Ah, that is Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, OMD, performing live and even a little lip-syncing here in the Soundcheck studio.
I was lip-syncing to my own vocoded voice.
That's allowed, yes. Isotype is from the forthcoming record called The Punishment of Luxury. Andy McCluskey singing, no bass guitar today, but singing's enough.
Not today, no. And there's hardly any bass guitar on this record, though, really, is there?
It's a blessing, isn't it?
But
lots of Paul Humphrey's keyboards and some laptop and backing vocals as well. Andy, I know it's sort of written into the text of the song, but explain what an isotype is.
Yeah, I'm a fan of mid-20th century art. An isotype was the sort of reductivist method of trying to present information in visual symbols. And I rather like it, and I wanted to write a song about it, and it was intended to be just a two-minute short piece, but then Paul wrote that beautiful soaring melody.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, no, now I've got to actually
write... It's
got
to be a song
I've
now.
Got to write lyrics. What the heck do you write about isotype?
It may have taken you a couple of months, but you nailed it, actually.
So it became a little bit more ambivalent then, because I started to sort of think about modern emojis and perhaps...
I was just going to ask you if an emoji is an isotype.
Well, they were isotypes are like the original emojis, really.
Yeah.
So my dilemma now, though, is that emojis, it's becoming of such an esoteric kind of language that it's like you have to know what the person means by their use of that emoji.
Right, right.
So it can get a little confusing.
Whereas the point of an isotype was that it would be universal. The stick figure slipping is the universal...
It's like
way
a
of saying, you know, caution when wet, you know.
Yeah, that's right. So it didn't matter what country you were in with what language it was.
But yeah, so it was a challenge to write the lyrics, but, you know, it's the sort of thing that Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark write songs about.
Yeah, so. Yeah. It's not the first time you've dipped into history for your subject matter.
No, it probably won't be the last.
Right. We heard just a snippet of Enola Gay, you know.
We've been there a few times.
The plane that dropped the atom on Hiroshima.
Right. At 8:15 a.m.
The time it's always been.
When all the clocks stopped.
Right.
That caused us a few problems because people did used to quite rightly say that it was, you know, how can you write a happy little ditty about such an appalling thing? And the only defense was to say, well, it's no weirder than dropping an atom bomb on Hiroshima in an airplane named after your mother.
Right, right.
That's what Enola Gay was, his mother's name.
Yeah.
I mean, we were incredibly flattered that they used it in the London Olympics ceremony.
Yeah.
But it was a little strange watching the sort of Japanese contingent walking around and playing Enola Gay.
A little cognitive dissonance there, I think.
But it was lovely to have it in the ceremony.
Yeah. So technology for you guys is also a topic that you've tackled in your songs, but it's also, of course, the tools that you guys use.
Yes.
So is that an ambivalent relationship as well between you guys and technology?
Kraftwerk used technology extensively, and they were our sort of mentors. You know, we looked to Kraftwerk when we were kids. We kind of wanted to be Kraftwerk early on. But
on a budget.
But yeah, well, that's the thing. That's why we sound how we do, because we couldn't afford the synths Kraftwerk had, so we couldn't sound like them. But it's more of a means to an end for us. I mean, we love the palette of sounds available to you that's not available on any other technology other than a synthesizer and a laptop.
We don't write songs that are just mindless celebrations of electronics and technology.
Yeah, we are robots.
Because, I mean, you know, I think we all came through that sort of, you know, the 50s, 60s, 70s when everybody was optimistic that technology and science and medicine was going to make this utopian future. And it turned out in many ways to be somewhat dystopian. Mm. Again, what we do really is the interface between humanity and machinery. It's eternal and going to become more and more influential and important now. And I think we exist where the humanity and the machinery joins. The very juxtaposition creates a melancholy tension, which I think is our sound.
Yeah.
I think that's where we exist as OMD, really, in that
area. And part of the OMD sound has always been this kind of fluid mixture of unprocessed voice, processed voice, and found voices taken from other contexts. And that seems to be, that continues.
An isotype has all of those in it,
But, you know, for us, anything is fair game to make music with, really.
Now, you guys, you probably knew the French composer Pierre Henry, one of the founders of Musique Concrète.
Yes. We didn't know him personally, yeah, but yeah, we've heard of him.
Yeah, we know of his work.
Because,
yeah,
you know, he just passed away. I had no idea he was even still alive.
No, I didn't.
Oh my gosh,
I didn't know he passed away.
He was 90 something.
Quite old, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We have used Found Sounds and Musique Concrète on many occasions because it's part of our raison d'être to try to expand the boundaries of what you can do. The problem is it's getting harder and harder to find things that haven't already been used.
Yeah.
It
so,
really is.
You know, I mean, I think we've used Birdsong on this album, which we're not the first to, but we haven't used it before. And also, interestingly, we had a song on the last album called The Future Will Be Silent, because we were just thinking this very thing. And actually, most concrete sounds that you can try and make music out of are actually accidental byproducts of a function. And the more things get efficient, they don't accidentally make noise. They're much quieter now. So
will it's like electric
future,
cars.
Will the future be silent? You won't have clanking steam trains and pounding machines because they'll be more efficient.
Yeah.
Discuss.
You know, well, it's very interesting because there's this big controversy about should we be beaming out messages to other civilizations on other planets, because they'll be presumably a hell of a lot further advanced mm-hmm. than we are. And, you know, from our own history, we know how that goes when an advanced civilization meets a less. But the idea is that our planet is now quieter because we're not beaming broadcast signals out into the ether the way we did 50 years
right,
ago.
Yeah,
everything
because
is
we're using data
cable,
networks.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
So,
yeah. Well, maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
the planet doesn't feel quieter.
No, it definitely doesn't.
But from outside the atmosphere, apparently we are a much quieter planet now than we were 50 years ago.
The future will be silent.
Although interesting, because the Voyager spaceship, if that ever gets picked up by somebody and they'll go, oh, what kind of technology were they using? Discs, vinyl discs with a needle stuck on it.
Yeah. Do you really want to meet those guys? They're so not advanced.
Well, it is, you know, it is a very different industry that you guys reformed in from
totally.
The one that you formed in.
It's unrecognizable, really, from the sort of 70s and 80s.
So what
is... Yeah, well, it's because of the digital revolution.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's been a kind of a blessing and a curse, really, for musicians. I mean, it's taken a lot of money out of the industry and from the labels, so labels aren't investing in new artists anymore. Artists kind of have to fend for themselves and find their way through the internet and through Spotify. And
do you guys have to do that? I mean, you have almost 40 years of fandom, but do you still have to kind of like watch out for your own, you know, scheduling and touring? And
you know, we know we're not going to sell the number of records that we used to. We are making music now like when we were teenagers because we want to. We're having a conversation with ourselves. We're delighted that other people want to join in if it resonates with them, but we know that it's not going to be 5 million like it used to be 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is a completely different beast. And you know that the bottom line is quite simple. It's so conservative now because nobody wants to lose money. Two guys, teenagers, fans of Kraftwerk, playing songs that even our friends thought were terrible. We never get a deal.
No. Not in this climate.
Not in this climate.
Yeah. Fortunately, there is a new recording. This will be your 13th
album,
studio album. Lucky 13. It's called The Punishment of Luxury. You guys want to play the title track for us?
Sure, I'd love to.
All right, so we're speaking with Andy McCluskey and Paul Humphreys, the founding members of OMD, Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark. Let's hear a live performance here in the Soundcheck studio.
Now couldn't face it another day. you're right, think you're free, floating in your purgatory. But you made your choice, and you're living it every day.
Hey, hey, hey.
Lazy girl and dirty boy, surrounded by your broken toys, and you don't know how to make your pain just go away.
OMD, Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, live in the Soundcheck studio with the title track of their forthcoming album, The Punishment of Luxury. Andy McCluskey, Paul Humphreys playing a couple of songs for us here today. Andy, that's a title that you can take two ways, that obsession with luxury is being punished, or that luxury is its own punishment. Where does the title come from?
I think that you're correct on both accounts, basically. We actually appropriated the title from a painting, but the painting, frankly, is a misogynist title about bad mothers in purgatory. But it's late Victorian, so I hasten to add swiftly that that is not our sentiments. We've appropriated the title. Essentially, most people living in the Western modern world are, for the most part, better off materially than ever before. And yet, we seem to all be more unhappy. And the way we view it is the imagined order of religion, royal decree, nationalism, they're all fading as the imagined order of consumerism is brainwashing us over the last several decades. If you don't have the new big 4K digital TV, if your car isn't the newest one, if your kids aren't playing on the latest Xbox, if your wife isn't this shape, if you aren't earning that much money, you're not worthy of love or self-respect. Mm. That is the punishment of luxury.
The ultimate first world problem, as they say.
Completely. It's all about first world problems, yeah.
Yeah. So OMD, back in the day when, you know, when you guys were on the radio constantly, even a song like Enola Gay could go by and people would not necessarily read a political stance into it.
That's kind of deliberate in a way, because we don't want to be preachy.
Yeah, you know. But there are some songs on this new record, Kiss, 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 Bang, 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 for example. Mm-hmm. Certainly La Mitrailleuse, am I saying that right?
Yes, about the first
with,
war.
With its sampled machine gun sounds and stuff, where it's very difficult to listen to it and not think, no, there's something going on here.
We have always tried to strike a balance of not being too overtly preachy. Perhaps sometimes people have criticised us for being too metaphorical to the point where people don't know what we're singing about or talking about. So
It
is a fine line. La Mitrailleuse came from a painting that was about French machine gunners in the First World War. And again, it goes back to what we were discussing earlier about our interest and fascination about the human machinery connect. Because the First World War was essentially the first truly mechanized war. Some would argue the American Civil War was. And I was just looking at this painting, and there was a caption that just said, you know, bodies bent to the will of the machine. I went, I'm having that as a lyric.
Yes. That's recurring line in the song, and one that really kind of leaps off the page at you. Speaking of borrowed names and titles, where does Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark come from? I'm sorry to ask such an old, but there's always new people who don't know the story.
Yeah. I mean, it really doesn't mean anything.
It sounds like it really should.
It sounds like it should, yeah. But the thing was, we were in this band called The Id, and we left that band and wanted to do our own electronic things, because we'd played the Eric's Club in Liverpool as The Id, and so we'd got to know the owner and the booker of Eric's Club. We'd told him that we were doing sort of electronic experiments, and there was a slot opening up for a band from Manchester to play at Eric's Club, and that was Joy Division. And, so he said, come and play as support for him. And we said, okay. And he said, what are you called? And we said, oh, God, I don't know. And so we went round.
We'll get back to you on that one.
We'll phone you later on the afternoon, you know. So we went back to his house, and on his wall, he just wrote loads and loads of song titles, actually. And we just picked the daftest one, and the one that would make people know that we weren't like a punk band or we weren't a rock band, just something that made us stand out a little bit. And it was just a dare, really, and we were only going to do one gig.
Yeah, well, so the it name didn't really matter. Really didn't matter. And the other thing is, as well, it could have been worse.
Because underneath it,
below Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark was written Margaret Thatcher's Afterbirth. We could have been called that.
Could have been called MTA.
But see, that would have sounded pretty punky. That's actually a great punk band.
It's a great punk band, yeah. So it was would have been the wrong choice for us because we weren't a punk band.
It's still available, folks.
So wait, the first OMD gig was opening for Joy Division?
It was, yes, in October of 1978.
Wow.
Okay. 40 years ago.
There's some contention about it, because the Joy Division sites don't have them doing that gig. John Dowie was supposed to do it from Manchester, but we know we did it with Joy Division because I remember talking to Stephen Morris and watching him and watching Ian Curtis and thinking, he kind of dances like I do. Strange. And then, of course, we signed to Factory and we did gigs with them anyway for the next year.
So the name, Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, has a kind of an ambitious cast to it.
Pretentious, I think, is the word you're looking for. Yeah.
He just didn't want to say pretentious.
Thank you so much. That's really kind.
That was beautifully put, but what you meant was pretentious.
It's not pretentious if it's an ambition that you can then fulfill, which you guys did.
Oh, okay.
We'll see where I'm going.
I see where you're going with that. Yeah, we take that. Thank you.
When you played with an actual symphony orchestra, the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic, right?
That was incredible.
Yeah, we've played with several orchestras, actually. When we got back together in 2006, or when it was, we did say that this time, in this incarnation of OMD, we would do things that we've never done before. And one of them was play with an orchestra.
It was terrifying.
Because,
I mean, we started writing songs before we could actually play our instruments. We started, you know, just making it up. And there we were standing in front of 75 trained musicians.
It's terrifying.
And we just thought, they're going to find us out here. They're going to be like, why are we playing a one-fingered pizzicato melody? But it was the most exciting thing I've done in years. It was incredible.
And actually, speaking to the orchestra, they loved it too, actually. It was something completely different for them.
So I'm sure not a few of them probably grew up on your songs.
Actually, several of them did, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, quite often when people play with an orchestra, they still have the whole band, they play it like normal, and they sort of try and gratuitously weld some strings and some brass fanfares into it. We said to the guys who were helping us transcribe the music, we said, imagine we aren't even going to be there. Strip it right down and recreate every single thing with the full orchestra, and then we will try and fit on top. So it was full 75-piece monster orchestra with us sort of riding the back of its coattails.
Yeah, because too many bands do the opposite. They kind of bring their rock band and sort of bolt the orchestra around the rock band.
Right.
We just thought we'd do it the other way.
Well, a lot of what you do with electronic keyboards is attempting to get that kind of those different gradations of colors that you get in the different orchestral families.
Exactly.
So why not just give it to the
those instruments? Yeah, which is what we did, and it was absolutely one of the most incredible experiences of our career, I think.
Yeah. And that was all older stuff, right, that you did with them?
Yeah,
Well, it was 2009, so it was before we'd actually done any new albums.
Right, right. One of the nice things about OMD Mach 2 is that you don't ignore the first version. You know, you still play
old
songs.
We're really proud of our back catalogue. Yeah. I mean, we're not one of these bands that kind of goes, is kind of embarrassed about right. their hits and stuff like that. We totally embrace our catalogue and what we've done. And we want to find a balance between still going forward,
right.
but still embracing the OMD that people love and want to come and see. And hear these, people want to come and hear these old songs, and we try to play them as close to the originals as we can, because I think songs are like time capsules, they capture moments of your life, and events, they're like hooks to hang events of your life on. Yeah. I know they are for me, of other bands, so I think people have that with us.
Well, and this song you're about to do for us is exactly that. In an episode of Modern Family, the hit TV series. You know about this.
Yeah, we saw it.
Yeah.
Where Claire thinks that she's setting up the perfect anniversary gift for her husband, Phil. She's got the bass player from Spandau Ballet. She's going to play their song, and it's true. And then it turns out their song is actually your song. It's OMD's
And it's a breakup song.
It's a breakup song.
Well, you want to play it for us?
Yeah.
Sure.
Andy McCluskey and Paul Humphreys, the band is Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, OMD. And here's one of their classic hits live on Soundcheck. I won't cry, I won't wait. OMD, Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, live on Soundcheck with If You Leave. I mentioned before you played that that it's kind of the punchline to an episode-length joke in Modern Family. Paul, you guys, wasn't that originally written for a film, for Pretty in Pink?
Well, it was written for Pretty in Pink, but it wasn't the original song we wrote for Pretty in Pink. We wrote a different song, and then we flew out to Los Angeles with our multi-track tape to mix it, because we had a few days before we were going off on like a two-month American tour. And we get into Los Angeles and we get an urgent call from John Hughes saying, we need to talk, we need to talk. And he decided to change the end of the film.
Whoops.
And our song didn't work. and we said, okay, but like A&M had just, you know, decided to do a whole campaign based on, you know, promoting us in this film, and we now don't have a song. And so John said, just go into, I'll book you into Larrabee Studios in Los Angeles. I'll hire you all the equipment, because all your equipment's gone somewhere else. And just see what you come up with in 24 hours. And it's like, we just got off a plane, you know, from London. And it was like, we had to just go straight into a studio and write a song. And amazingly, we wrote that. I don't quite know how that happened.
So basically the film director says, I'm booking you in a studio. Give me a hit song by tomorrow.
Basically.
Yeah.
Basically,
yeah.
And you know, 9 times out of 10, it would be
a disaster. Yeah.
But we just got that.
We worked on it till about 3 or 4 in the morning. Gave a cassette to a bike rider to take it to Paramount. He dropped it off at the gate. John picked it up at 7:30. We get a call at 8:30 from our manager. We'd only been asleep for 2 hours, and our manager goes, he loves it. Can you go back in and finish it? And
we're like, oh my God, I want to sleep!
2 hours, so we had to go back and spend another 24 hours recording it properly.
Now, before you played that song, Paul, you mentioned how you like to do some of the old songs as close to the original as possible.
Yeah.
They're time capsules for people. These songs are 30, some of them are 35, getting on to 40 years old.
Yeah.
Your voices will have deepened over that
period.
They
do tend to, yeah.
I mean, I listened to tapes of myself from 30, 35 mm-hmm. years ago, and it's like little Johnny Schaefer. I don't know who this person is. So
yeah, but you know, Andy, being the lead singer, I mean, we don't have to drop any of our keys. He's still singing them.
He's still
our,
up there getting up.
In our original keys.
I don't know how much longer it is. I mean, singing for an hour and a half every night, trying to hit those high notes is... But I have to say, finally, about 7 or 8 years ago, I had singing lessons for the first time in my life, and I was taught how to vowel bend. Have you heard of that?
No.
Vowel bending. Because if you sing the letters E and I, they pull your vocal cords. If you sing it full voice. So what you tend to do is to actually slide in an A or an O, but people don't
notice.
So I'm kind of, instead of saying, if you leave, I'm kind of saying, if you leave. But when you're singing it live, people don't notice. You get it. I've just let the secret out the bag now, haven't I? But I don't know how much longer I'll do it, but it's
I think
it
also
helps.
Also the hiatus in touring, we stopped touring for at least, you weren't singing live for at least 10 years.
No.
And that probably helped. So you didn't keep trashing your voice for another 10 years.
But I am incredibly boring on tour now. I mean, the hour and a half on stage is my only fun. And I mean, everybody else loves it because I'm quiet for a change.
Uh-huh.
I go to bed. I'm the first one in bed.
Do you see me complaining?
Andy, Paul, it's been great fun having you guys here.
Been
Thank
really
you so
good
much.
Fun.
Thank you so much. It's great to talk with you and be able to play some tunes.
You've been listening to an episode of the Soundcheck podcast from our archives. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our producer is Karen Havlick. I'm John Schaefer. You can see and hear much more on our website. Check it out at newsounds.org.